From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, September 10th, 2010. Each week, this podcast brings you news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, executive editor in Somerville, Massachusetts, and I'll be on my own today. This week, I want to consider two trends going on in geospatial technology, location-based services, and volunteer geographic information. And I want to suggest it might be time for some repositioning of those trends, that they're in fact being misrepresented in some of the stories being told by the geospatial community, by those using those technologies and services, and by the media. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. Learn how to increase productivity with ArcGIS 10. Register to attend a free seminar near you. For more information, visit www.esri.com/10seminar.
Now, what tends to happen with technologies and trends and services is that the stories get told about them, and that's how people understand what they are and make decisions about whether or not to participate or use them. And those stories get told by the companies that are behind the trends, that are trying to make money off of them. They're told by the people who use the technologies, participate in the services. They're told by the media. That's one of the roles that the Directions Media certainly plays. But sometimes those stories start taking technologies and trends down a path that may not be the best one for the long term. It may not be the best one for the businesses behind it. It may not be the best one for the users. And in the case I want to talk about, it may not be the best one for the geospatial community. So what I want to do is look at location-based services and volunteer geographic information and suggest some repositionings that might move those trends and services forward a little bit. Now let me talk about location-based services first. And what I want to share are sort of the stories that I'm hearing as I look out over the media and talk to those inside of geospatial technologies and those outside. And a couple of themes come through regularly. I keep hearing these stories. One of them seems to suggest that location-based services are solely about sharing my location, that I cannot participate in location-based services unless I share my location with the world or people who I really don't want to have that information. A second kind of theme that I hear has to do with the long-term commitment related to location-based services, that if I get in, I'm going to get sucked in over a long period of time and I can't get out and I don't have the energy to make that kind of commitment as I might to a Facebook or a Twitter or something like that. And the final theme that I keep hearing is that location-based services are really about social networking, that it's yet another Facebook kind of thing that I have to participate in, and I'm not really sure about the return on investment of that. Now, what concerns me about those kinds of comments is that they totally discount what I think was the original intent of location-based services, which had to do with taking advantage of my location as a factor in collecting information that might be valuable to me. Or as I heard Michael Jones put it recently, these technologies put you at the center of the map. And if you like, you can picture yourself standing on a map and all the arrows are pointing from the map to you. What's getting all the buzz these days is sort of the reverse of that, which is you standing in the middle of the map with all the arrows coming from you out to the map and out to the world. But I think it's that former understanding of location-based services that really has the most return on investment. Here's where I am, map, you might say. Find me the nearest police station and route me to that police station. That doesn't have anything to do with sharing your location with lots and lots of people. It does have to do with you sharing it with a small number of organizations, maybe your cell carrier, maybe the folks who put together the app that you're using, maybe it's Google, maybe it's somebody else. But somehow those kinds of uses are just getting so overshadowed by the social aspects and the you sharing your information out to the world, that I fear that location-based services are sort of getting usurped by this whole idea of checking in and letting people know where you are. Now, the other aspect of location-based services that I think is getting misrepresented maybe has to do with this long-term commitment. And in point of fact, I think the best way for those concerned about privacy or who don't feel very comfortable with location-based services is to only take advantage of them when you need them. If you're in a city that you don't know well and you need to find the nearest hospital, that's a good time to take advantage of location-based services. And then, after that situation is taken care of, turn them back off. Either turn off the app or turn off the tool that's collecting your location information. Because then all that you're really sharing with anybody, again, a handful of companies or potentially more people, all that you're sharing is a very small split second of information about where you were on one particular day. And that isn't as scary as telling your location constantly to lots and lots of people. Now, it's interesting that that timing aspect has really hit the news lately, and it's hit it, strangely, in the education sector. And there were two stories in the past week that had to do with, if you like, tracking students. And it turns out that in Palos Heights School District 128, that's in Illinois, students were given RFID tags. And the idea is that when they get on the bus, they scan the ID card on a scanner so they know they've gotten on the bus. I assume they also scan it when they get off the bus. And the headline in a lot of the stories that I read about this said that the students were being tracked by GPS. Well, if all they have is an RFID card, they're not being tracked by GPS. In point of fact, the school buses themselves are being tracked by GPS. But really, all the data that's getting collected are these handful of points in time that say that Susie or Johnny scanned the card, or somebody scanned the card. We don't even know if it really was Susie or Johnny. So that the amount of information is very small. And again, it's just two data points or four data points a day if they get on and off the bus to go to school and to come back. And that's had parents saying, wow, that really lessens my worry that my kids are being tracked via GPS, which of course they're not. Others, of course, are claiming that this is an invasion of privacy and so forth. Now, if you look at the other end of the education spectrum, and this is what's going on at Northern Arizona University, is that they're doing something like the same thing for university students. Again, they're given ID cards with RFID tags, and when they enter a large lecture class, they're asked to scan themselves in. And the idea here isn't to make sure that they got on the bus safely and got to school safely. It really has to do with making the students more successful, or that's what the university explains it. What they're suggesting and what has been shown is that students who actually go to class are more likely to do better and are more likely to graduate in 4 years. So one of the ways to incentivize students to go to class is to, in fact, take attendance, which is a lot easier with a huge lecture class with scanned cards than actually calling the roll, and then to base their grade on whether or not they show up. And as is the case with any kind of technology like this in these times, somebody is going to raise their hand and say, oh, big brother, and they're tracking me. Well, in this case, they're tracking one data point once a day, maybe 3 days a week if it's a three-day-a-week course. And really what you're telling the university is that you actually are attending the class that you signed up for. Now remember, the university already knows that you signed up for Chemistry 101 at 8 a.m. All this is doing is telling the university that yes, in fact, you showed up. So if you didn't scan the card, wouldn't the university already think that you were going to be there? So again, this whole idea of continuously sending out location information and Big Brother, we need to start telling some stories that are about non-continuous use of geographic information. And again, about the positives. The idea here is to help you get through school. Now, certainly for the university, that's a business issue. They want you to be there for 4 years and pay them for 4 years and come out the other end. And that's fine. That's a good reason to do this. But somehow the story is always getting told on the tracking side, not on the benefit side. Let me move on to volunteer geographic information. The stories that I'm hearing about volunteer geographic information sadly seem to be more about the role of geospatial professionals as those who vet the data that's coming in from all of these citizen scientists, if you like, or citizen participants. And we're going to figure out which is the good data and which is the bad data and what to do about it or with it. And I'm not sure that's the right story. I think really the story is we as geospatial professionals need to be involved in the collection of geospatial information from citizens from before the start, if you like. We need to be involved in deciding what data is going to be collected, how it's going to be collected, on what kinds of hardware, using what kinds of applications, and then we need to be involved in the vetting of that data and hopefully in the visualization of that data and the decision-making related to that data. And what's happening instead is that all kinds of folks are putting together applications to capture that data who don't have that kind of perspective. And I'm going to point back to the recent oil spill in the Gulf where seemingly dozens of applications came out asking people to collect data. And I was very disappointed with what was done with the data, based on what I've learned, which was not very much was done with the data, and the apps themselves. Now, the best uses of volunteer geographic data, and this seems to be sort of the case study of the times, is related to the earthquake in Haiti, where sort of a combination of tools, OpenStreetMap and UShahidi, were used to collect data and collect information about those in need. And one of the reasons that that worked so well was those tools were already up and running. They already had applications. They could be quickly customized for use for this particular situation. And we need more of that kind of thing where the geospatial professionals are involved, if you like, even before the crisis happens, in developing the tools that are going to be used all the way through to taking advantage of and sharing that information. And I want to quote David Smith, who did a really nice write-up of the ESRI Federal User Conference, where there was a lot of discussion about what went on in Haiti. Let me just quote one sentence here. He said, one of my comments in my follow-up to Jack Dangerman was that some of the governance and user guidance can be put directly into the tools, unquote. And what he's saying is the tools used to collect that data. And his point is, you know, we need to be involved in as low a level as possible as we put together these kinds of collection opportunities to get as valuable data as we can. And frankly, not to waste the time of the volunteers who are going out to do the data collection. So I think we need to turn VGI from being just a database of data that these people create on our behalf and we have to go through it and clean it up and figure out what it is, to, in fact, trying to get the best data possible. And I continue my search for some best practices related to VGI. And I'm looking forward to seeing those in the coming months and years. So to wrap up, let me just say that we need to be on the lookout for trends in geospatial information. And we need to listen carefully to the stories that are being told, the ones that are being told within our community and outside of our community and by those using the tools and services. And sometimes we may need to tweak those stories or help push those stories in a different way to make these trends more successful for geospatial technologists and hopefully in our efforts to make the world a better place. That's all the time I have. Before I go, our sponsor, ESRI, would like you to know that ESRI Press recently published Getting to Know ArcGIS Desktop, second edition for ArcGIS 10. The book introduces GIS principles and includes step-by-step exercises that teach the fundamentals of working with ArcGIS desktop software. For more information, visit www.esri.com/ESRI Press. And here at Directions Media, we are getting ready for LIGO Cloud 2010, which will happen on September 22nd at the Museum's Knight Conference Center in Washington, D.C. The agenda is online, and we look forward to seeing our speakers and attendees. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can send us an email at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can leave a comment at Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.